Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in today for Dave Pezzo along with Tom Brown. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, we've got a lot of things to cover today. We're sitting here talking about everything going on in the world and the market and everything in the economy. There's just so many things to cover, but there are a couple topics that we felt we should really do. But before we get to that, we've been working with Dave Pezzo at Pezzo Financial now for me almost 30 years, Tom almost 20. It's crazy how fast the time goes.
I know.
Right? We look at each other and say, I don't feel like I've not known you that long.
I know.
We haven't aged a day, right?
I know, exactly.
As your 15-year-old son is sitting in here with us listening
today. Yeah, exactly. And we both remember that that's when, you know, that we remember when he came to be with us.
Yes, we do. Very well. So first, a couple things. We're going to talk today about habits of successful investors, just to give you some tidbits on what we think you need to do to be a successful investor. I think it's very good timing with everything going on in the market right now. Risk tolerance. What does that mean? Everyone says you need to know your risk tolerance before you should invest. Also, what is looking at conservative, moderate, aggressive? And the question of the day, are we in a recession? Everyone's talking about it. Everyone wants to know. We have some thoughts on that as well. But first of all, what a week.
Yeah, it was a great week.
Yeah, out of nowhere. The market just, I mean, last month, it's been kind of going up since my husband's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was the refresh for the year.
Yeah, I guess it hit rock bottom on his birthday.
It did.
Maybe there's something to do with that.
Yeah, but the Dow this week was up over 2.5%, S&P up 4.12, and the NASDAQ was up almost 5.
Yeah.
In just a heartbeat. And what, based on what? Have we gotten better confidence?
No. And you don't have any feeling that there's anything getting better.
No.
You know, all the headlines are still negative. You know, still always, are we going into a recession? Are we in a recession?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All that stuff.
The war is still going on.
People can't find people to hire.
Right, right.
Still really a problem.
And of course, we're not recommending any of the stocks that we're going to mention. It's back to what we were saying. You got to have a plan. You got to have risk tolerance, everything that goes into it. But Apple was up 5.5% last week. Amazon was up 10% on Friday. So in a blink of an eye, when we talk about these companies that everybody was fearful of buying when they were in their lows, you didn't do it or you sold. And this is what you miss out on.
Yeah. And I actually read an article end of last week where it said Amazon, you know, is basically, you know, although it's a huge company, you know, the heyday of Amazon is over, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They always say that, right? Mm-hmm. They always find something about every company that's out there to say, this is it, they're done. Kind of when we were talking about stocks and how they handle inflation, not hyperinflation. I know that gets a little bit different. We're in a weird time right now, too. But a lot of that is because we're reopening. This has never been done before.
Right. We've never come back from a pandemic.
Right. A shutdown and a reopen. Where
the economy was shut down. So we should expect that things are going to have that are going to be completely weird.
Yeah.
How
do you measure it?
And we never injected trillions of dollars within a year and a half into the the government didn't just push money into people's pockets.
Mm-hmm.
In that shorter period of time. Whenever you do something like that, whenever you're doing that, there's all weird outcomes could happen.
Absolutely. So then if you look at your portfolio and you say, you know what, I was so worried going in since the beginning of the year and how painful that felt. But the last 3 years prior to have been really, really strong. And we don't get that feeling of euphoria because everything is going well. It just becomes expected.
Right.
So then we have a correction, which is also expected.
Mm-hmm.
And we all sit around and go, oh, I can't handle it. I need to get out.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when we get a bad cold. People get a bad cold and they don't go, well, this is it. I'm dying. I'm dead. The market has a bad cold. And we know we're going to get a bad cold every once in a while. The market's going to get a bad cold every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the great thing about it, or the thing to consider is about the math is, if you have the market going up 20% 2 or 3 years in a row, you know if it's going to go back to the average of 10, you're going to have some sort of something below 10 to get that average.
Mm-hmm.
So people should have expected it.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be something that came out of the blue.
Mm-hmm. But the expectation on the positive is always there, not on the negative. It's always supposed to go up. It's never supposed to go down. And volatility had been out of the picture for such a long time, too, that we just got used to everything just slow grow, slow grow, slow grow. And now we get a little volatility. We get a little bit of a negative return. And instead of wanting to buy, although I have to say, I had more clients call me this year than ever before and say, I want to put money in.
Yeah.
So it's, I also think people are starting to understand the opportunity to buy low. Mm-hmm. They don't always want to because they feel like, oh, it's just going to get lower. I'll wait till it gets a bit lower. But then again, like you said, in 2009, nothing triggered it to turn around. This nope. time, nothing triggered it to turn around. But we don't know either. I mean, this could right. be, I don't think it's a dead cat bounce because it's right. been a little bit more sustained because we've had a little over a month of it. But could we go back down from here? Of course we could.
And we could always, right? Yeah. Even if we're in a bear market, even if you're in a great market, the market could always have a bad time.
It will always have a bad time.
Yeah.
And, not, you know, it's so, funny, not could, would, yeah. it will, right?
So you always sit there and go, well, of course it could. So anything could happen. But if you look at history, it'll work out.
It always has historically recovered. And also remember, when we're buying into the market, we're buying the great corporations of the world. Sometimes I think we lose what the market is and we just start to feel it's more like they advertise a casino, it's gambling, it's whatever other word they want to throw. There are sectors, I agree, and there are classes and there are things that are more gambling. But when you're an investor and you're buying the great corporations of the world and they temporarily have a price decrease, you shouldn't throw them out and just mm-hmm. sell them just because of that. All right, we're going to take a phone call real quick. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jennifer and Tom. How's it going again?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. I've just been waiting for the longest time for old Dave to take a powder and disappear for a while. So anyway, as I understand it, July was a pretty good month.
It was.
Well, anyway, I was going to say, for instance, I'm looking at the graph on my statement. And whatever the starting point is, you know, it looks like like I told my financial advisor, it looks like the flight path of a Boeing 737 MAX, to use a cruel analogy.
Right.
But it shows the thing going up strongly, you know, and then it kind of levels off, and all of a sudden there's up, down, and then all of a sudden it starts going down, you know, considerably. And then right before it hits the starting point, you know, it bounces up, mm-hmm. goes up. And anyway, during this, a couple of weeks ago, I bought about 3 more stocks. So anyway.
Good for you. I mean, because that was a hard time to buy, right? I mean, basically most of the indices bottomed on June 16th, June 17th for the Dow. So buying 3 weeks ago, you almost got the bottom.
Well, you know, the thing is that, I don't know. I look at cash as being something that one does not want, right? Mm-hmm. One does not want cash. You got too much cash around. You need to do something with it. And rather than go out and buy the latest electric car that would be a total, you know, asinine, I was going to ask Dave. Okay, now, the fad these days is into electric cars. There's no demand. There's no grid. Why the hell, if this is capitalism, why the hell are Ford and Chevrolet and all this crap getting on the old bandwagon when there's no demand for it?
You know, I think there is more of a demand than we think there is. It's just right now, how do we handle the infrastructure, right? Because, I mean, there's not enough availability to even plug cars in. We have friends that have an electric car, and they can't drive it on road trips because they don't have a place to stop along the way to charge. So some of it is, I just don't think the infrastructure is there yet for it. I think the demand would be higher if it was easier to do.
Right.
Well, see, that's the thing. They're selling an idea. They're mm-hmm. selling a fantasy. Mm-hmm. You buy the damn thing and you can't use it.
Hey, we were going to have flying cars by now, remember?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that flying cars would most assuredly help the road structure, the infrastructure.
Well, it would change things quite a bit as far as infrastructure when you don't have to.
It would make my commute easier.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have to deal with all the traffic, right?
Except collisions would be a lot different because he'd be dropping out of the sky.
Yeah, or hopefully you could avoid them.
Well, now that we've had drones and stuff. So anyway, I just wanted to call in and say hi and welcome you back. And things are hunky-dory. And I hate that expression, dead cat bounce. I'm a cat person.
I love cats too. It sounds terrible, doesn't it?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where that expression came from, but
we'll have to look
anyway,
it up.
You all take care.
All right, Jim. Always great to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. All right. But he's right. You know, the month of July is amazing. We actually wrote down a couple of investments and how they did. I mean, Amazon in the month of July was up over 27%.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. It's just like in a blink of an eye, it turned. Apple was up over 18%. So these are large companies that did get beaten up too. I always feel like when they go down so far, sometimes it's an overreaction to the downside. And so, mm-hmm. of course, they're going to bounce. One of the analogies I used to love that Dave used all the time was kind of like a coiled spring, right? Mm-hmm. All the downward pressure pushing on that spring, eventually it will snap back up. Of course, we never know when these are going to happen, and it's a lot easier to talk about when we're on this side of it than we were. And now, for the first time in probably this year, you're going to get your monthly statement and not be going, oh my goodness, and put it away.
Yep. You can actually, you're going to encourage people to look at their statement this month.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about habits of successful investors, and we would love phone calls, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petzo along with Tom Brown this morning. And his son, Torin Brown, is joining us as well. He's really wanting to say something, I'm sure, but right now he's busy studying, right?
Can he imagine a 15-year-old really wanting to be on the
radio? Finance? Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Our phone numbers are 580-KIDO, 580-5436. And if you would prefer, you can email me at jstone@petzofinancial.net. Talking a lot about what happened in the market the last week, month, as well as habits of successful investors. But I know Tom had something he really wanted to talk about on electric cars, because he's going to get one tomorrow,
because
right?
Because I was, you know, getting my down payment. You know, it was interesting. Jim brought that up because, you know, why are companies started like Chevrolet and all these putting out these electric cars? And a lot of it is probably in the back rooms. They're doing the math and they go, we're not really going to make much money on these if we just build them. But the government and the politics of the thing is to say, hey, we're going to make you, or we're going to make it very, because of politics or because of all this, we're going to almost force you mm-hmm. to consider building something that economically or fundamentally doesn't make much sense.
Right, right.
But that's the world we live in now, is that everything is getting politicized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with the new spending bill that they're coming out with, the anti-inflation bill, a lot of it is going towards green energy and incentivizing corporations and companies to go more green. So they're building better factories or upgrading the factories in Detroit, all this to lean towards going green. It almost feels like a forced situation. And believe me, I actually went to a meeting with one of the economic firms that we really listen to a lot, and he made the point. He's like, nobody is anti-green. They always sit there and say, you've got the greens and you've got the what? Mm-hmm. Well, we're not anti-green. We just don't want to do it in a way that's not logical and doesn't make a lot of sense. If this can be done well, of course, all of us want to take care of the earth and do it better. But we don't want it to be phony either.
Yeah, and it has to make sense. And when it makes sense, then it's going to work out great. But what they're doing and all that, and the impact it's really having when you net out all the stuff that you have to do to build an electric car and the energy you have to spend and all the other things you have to do, the net effect isn't that much.
Not yet. But I can see it getting better and better, right? That's what we hope.
Yeah. I mean, even Dave said that eventually he's sure that he'll have solar panels on the top of the building, you know?
And you know what? If you drive one of those electric cars, they are quick and they're kind of fun to drive.
Yeah, I've
that
never
whole
driven one.
Meaty horsepower thing has gone to more of an electric smooth. Anyways.
Oh, yeah. But I have driven an electric car. It was on the golf course.
That doesn't go fast. All right. So what is a good habits of investors? You know, we work with a lot of different people. Some of them are very emotional driven. Others aren't. But when it comes to your money, especially when you're approaching a time when you may need it, we all get emotional. We all look at it and go, I was planning on retiring, but, or I was hoping to do this, but. So we can say we're not emotional. We can say we don't feel it. I think as an advisor, we become way more tolerant of swings of the market. I understand that we get nervous for our clients. But what are some of the habits that we see of our most successful investors? I would have to say, number one, before we go to the break at the top of the hour, is getting started. No one comes to us at age 60 and says, I want to retire at 65 and I have not started. Well, you're not going to be able to retire comfortably. Get started. Open up Roth IRAs. Start saving. Looking at your budget. Getting started is the number one thing, I believe, for everybody that wants to be a successful investor.
Yeah. Have a plan.
Yep. They'll get into that too. That's step two. Getting started, step one. So that determines.
Jumping ahead.
Yeah, you are. You're going to go through my list and before we even get going.
No, I don't plan on it, but I yeah. I always like to get ahead a little bit.
There you go, yeah.
Be proactive.
There you go. So, yeah, getting started, what does that look like? I mean, first thing you do is always look at your budget. Always look at your budget and see where your biggest spends are. Saw a couple clients this week that were way overspending, but they weren't really aware of it. So that's a super important thing. Also, look at your overall ability to save, because you should be putting away 10 to 20 to 30% of your money. We'll go into more detail on that because obviously you hear the music, but always give us calls. We'd really love to talk with you. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. And email's great. We'll check it all the time and see if we get anything from you. But we look forward to your phone calls, hopefully, after the top of the hour. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown, filling in for Dave Petso today. We are two of the certified financial planners at Petso Financial. Been there for quite a few years now, mm-hmm. and we get to fill in every once in a while when Dave gets a break, which is good for him, and we love to do it.
Yeah, it's always awesome.
Yes. So phone number 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Please give us a call or email me, jstone@petsofinancial.net. Getting started, what does that look like? First of all, sit down with your spouse if you have one. If you do not, just sit down and make a list of what you think you would like to do. And this is where that plan comes in, and say, I would like to retire at age 55. I need to have X amount of income, and try to figure out what those targets and goals are. I want to start saving 5, 10, 15, 20%. Write it down. The reason I say write it down is anything that you do to hold yourself accountable will make you more successful.
Yeah, and like you said, if you're single, find some accountability partner, somebody to that can help you. You didn't like that word?
No, not at all, not at all.
So anyway, find somebody that can you check in with. They'll hold you if you set a goal. They'll check in with you and make sure you're staying on the plan.
Right, and that's where a financial advisor can come into play, or a spouse, or a friend, or a family member, someone that will help you to keep you on track. And when you get off your plan, you can go back to it. We don't want to live in an echo chamber. Dave says that a lot. We say it a lot. You don't want to find someone that agrees with every decision you make, because not every decision may be correct for you.
Exactly.
So that's where we go back to having that partner, having someone to talk with. Doesn't necessarily have to be a financial advisor. You mm-hmm. just need someone.
Yep.
An unbiased person.
Yep. Someone that is objective.
Yes.
You hope they're objective.
Yeah. Yes. And that's where a lot of times we say having an outside person, because you sit and talk with your spouse. I tell people when they get into retirement, it's kind of fun to sit down away from each other and write down what their top objectives are, what they want to do. One couple, probably my favorite, was very cute. She wrote down, travel the world, see Europe, go do this, that. He wrote down, have enough food, pay the power. It was just these very practical things. So he kind of missed the point. And when they came and they showed it to me, because they didn't share until they sat down in my office, they both started to laugh because she was dreaming and having so much fun. And he went, oh, I thought we meant what did we need? I'm like, no.
It's funny. It goes to that, the Dave Ramsey thing of the spender and the nerd, you know. And that's what makes a great couple, right, is that the lady was going to pull him out and get him out of the house and do stuff. He was going to make sure that the bills were paid and everything, and the food was on the table. So as always, is helpful to have somebody that has a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. You have your mm-hmm. practical and you have your dreamer, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the part about it, if you save well and you hit your targets and your plans, hopefully you don't have to worry about the day to day expenses and taking care of just eating and getting by, and you can have more fun and dream.
And I think what you're saying is really important on the plan. A plan helps you understand if you can afford something, right? We want to get a place in McCall. We want to do this. And then you check with your plan and you go, oh, we can do that. Or no, it doesn't work out. We're going to have to do things differently and tweak the plan if we want to do that, instead of blowing up the plan and then say, what are we going to do now?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the one thing about investing plans, I think they're a lot easier. We just kind of equated a lot to health and fitness, which makes sense because they both require discipline. But the one thing with health and fitness is you can easily just stop immediately. You can start eating terrible, stop working out immediately. But with finance, you actually have to make an effort to stop. Yeah. So if you're contributing to your 401k or to a Roth IRA or automatically moving money to a savings account, because that's all part of your plan, it takes a lot to stop those. So that's why we say pause, go back to the plan and look at it, and don't cancel those things because of what the market conditions are. If you have a plan, stick to it. We met with another couple this week too, and they said we were very, very comfortable in 2019 and 2020. And even into 2021, they said, we just felt great. Everything was good. We were contributing a lot to our 401ks, to our Roths. But this year, we stopped because we didn't feel as good. So that's what we're going to talk about later. What is risk tolerance, right? Mm-hmm. Because they did the exact opposite of what they would tell you they want to do in a meeting, which is to buy low and sell high. And they did the exact opposite.
Right. This goes back to that thing of being sick. You know, if you're feeling good, and you're working out, and you're doing all this stuff, you feel good, it's easy to stay on a plan. Mm-hmm. It's when you have those bad days and you go, man, I just don't want to get out. I don't want to go run. I'm not going to do that. It's easy to go, well, I'm just going to, this isn't as easy as it was. So when it gets harder, as a human, it's easy to, well, I'm just going to kind of let it go then.
Mm-hmm. And we all know everybody wants to have fun and do things that are enjoyable because life is short and we all want to have that. But we also don't want to live in a reduced lifestyle during retirement. So if you save a little now, you don't have to save a lot later. So the sooner you can get started, the better it is for you. And don't spend first, save second. Always save and then spend what's left. I really, really like this quote. It was a newer one that I hadn't heard from a while from Warren Buffett. He says, do not save what is left after spending. Spend what is left after saving. So just shift the way you think about things, right? We always used to say, pay yourself first. That means those 401k contributions. Make sure you're doing that. I don't care if they match or they don't. It's an automatic, easy way of putting money aside.
Right. And I think when we go through markets like this, the last thing you should consider is stopping putting money in. That is the exact last thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to move things around or whatever, that is not good either. But stopping the plan of putting it in, because then when do you start again? What is that instigation of, mm-hmm. okay, I'm going to get back on the plan, and it could be years later.
Yep. When we build portfolios, we don't build them with the anticipation of changing them if we have a correction. We build these portfolios and these models to meet goals. And those goals can be retirement, spending, whatever that might be, putting in a pool. I don't know, whatever your dream might be. We build the portfolios to meet that goal. So when we have a market that's expected to have an everyday occurring correction and we have one, we don't sit there and think, what should we do different now? Well, when we build these, we buy great corporations that we think can be there for all market conditions. We're not going to trim something when we feel like it's a good business. If we think that Apple is one of the better companies that's ran well, and again, not an endorsement, it's just an easy analogy because everyone owns an Apple product pretty much. If we believe in these companies, why would we shift if they have a temporary price reduction?
Yeah.
That's why write it down.
In fact, whenever you look at something you really want to buy or own, mm-hmm. and it goes on sale, then we run out and buy it.
Yes.
But when it comes to stocks, we second guess it, yeah. I think, a lot.
And if you could buy, you think about Amazon a month ago, 30% lower in value.
I know. And the thing, and it even, you know, a lot, even though stock splits are not, you know, it is more of a gimmick than anything, is still, now that they have this big stock split and you can buy all these shares, I'm sure that it was a lot, hopefully it can attract people to buy it more. But
yeah.
But the most important thing is that this is a great company. It's going to be around forever. It isn't like, oh, maybe this is going out. Walmart, all these other companies have been struggling.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to survive. Why not buy them when we can buy them really cheap?
Yeah, and it's funny too, because people don't want to buy good quality companies, but people are shocked, and this one got me too, with Bitcoin. And again, I know I'm not endorsing or mm-hmm. not, but I just, when you look at some of the Bitcoin companies in the cybersecurity going to zero and then some going away and tying up your money and you can't get it out because there was a run on the bank, basically, mm-hmm. and they're frustrated that government's not helping. Well, people went into cryptocurrency because they wanted no regulation on how it worked. But then when it blows up, now we want regulation.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how this whole cycle works and how comfortable people are with something that's that volatile versus buying some of the great corporations of the world. We're going to go right to the phones. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good. Good morning. It's a fine day in the neighborhood.
Not hot yet, but it's getting there.
Well, yeah. Hey, you could tell David to stand down the team. I only got one number with my Mega Ball.
Oh, man. Yeah. Darn it.
Take it to wealth sweepstakes.
So, yeah, there's another investment retirement plan right there, right?
Well, that's it. My retirement plan always depended on six little numbers, but...
Yeah, but you earned them instead of guessing, right?
Yeah. Well, you if you don't play some, you got a dull life.
There you go. Yep.
But I did have one thing going on, well, a whole bunch of things that thinking about, but when I read an article when I was working one day at an Airman magazine or something, but it always said, pay yourself first. Every promotion I ever got, I took 50% of what I was going to net out of it and put that aside.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then blew the rest of it.
Good.
You know,
that's
you
nothing
know,
wrong with that, right? You're saving first.
Yeah. And one other wise person I listened to said, you can't be an investor until you become a saver.
That's good.
You get the habit set up of saving and putting a little aside, and then all of a sudden you say, whoa, I've got a few thousand dollars here, and that's earning me 0.5% interest. What am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So anyway, that's what I had, except for my Bitcoin is going to do exceptionally well for my yet-to-be-conceived great-grandchildren.
There
so
you go.
Don't yell at me too hard for having one.
You know what? I would never yell at people. I just don't understand it. So it's a little bit more tricky for me because I don't get how it all works. So
yeah, it's an ultimate gamble the way
there
I look
you go.
At it. And it's fun, something else to learn.
There you go. That sounds perfect to me, Terry.
Well, you kids have a wonderful day.
Thanks, you too.
You too.
All right. And phone calls, please. We love them. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. And we do always like to rub it in if we get more phone calls than Dave. So please give us a call or email.
It used to be that we'd like six or seven.
It must be the summer lull, right?
Yep.
There you go. Yeah. So we did touch on this a little bit, but I still want to go back to Habits of Successful Investors. And this time is we keep going into this. It's called Don't Overreact. Don't get worried. Don't get overly exuberant. It goes both ways, right? We get to the point of people see an asset that did really, really well, and they get that fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. So that FOMO, as they like to call it. It goes both sides, right? You want to sell if things get beaten up too much, and then you also feel like you're missing out because you didn't buy the things that are winning. So that's why if you write down a plan and say, this is how I'm going to invest my money, it can maybe temper that a little bit. I mean, I can't totally take it away,
right,
but temper it.
Because everybody's human. And, you know, in our business and so forth, we have something called an investment policy statement. And you can do one for yourself. And you just go, this is going to be my personal investment policy statement. This is how I'm going to invest. This is what I'm going to invest in. And for what goals and so forth, it's a different way of looking at it, but it sets some parameters how you're going to do things. And if you write it down, you're more apt to start living up to that than not.
Mm-hmm. And if you write it down in good times, review it in bad. Mm-hmm. Write it down in bad times and review it in good.
Right.
Just don't always let your emotions, and that we'll go into risk tolerance in a minute too, but don't let your emotions dictate your investments. Let your objective.
Exactly. The emotions, behavior, that's the key to this, and you can have mediocre investments and be very successful, but if your behavior is bad, it doesn't matter if you had great investments or not. You weren't able to stay in them.
Right,
so,
right. When we come back, we're going to touch a few more tidbits on being a successful investor, get into risk tolerance, and what does moderate, conservative, and aggressive mean to us. But please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petso on this beautiful summer day. We're in a heat wave, aren't we?
Yeah, it's a beautiful summer day this morning.
Yes, it was even hot last night. We went out around, I don't know, it was after midnight, I think, taking our new puppy out because he had to go potty, of course, and it was still hot.
Yeah.
Just has not cooled off yet this year, but I think next week it's supposed to get better after we get through this.
We're going camping, so I hope it does.
Oh, boy. Fun. Oh, well, at night it'll cool off, right?
We hope.
Good, good, good. All right, so you want to be a successful investor. It's not really that difficult.
Nope.
Just get started. Write down a plan, have someone to talk to when you get nervous. Sounds like counseling almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
That will not confirm what you're feeling. Read things that aren't in an echo chamber. Start to diversify your thoughts as well as how you're investing. If you think the same thing all the time and you review it, you're going to get nervous. And we're going to talk a little bit about a recession and how even economics has become political. I know we all have strong beliefs one way or the other, or most of us, but don't let that change your investing. Buy what you believe in, hold it through all market conditions, and you will become wealthy.
Yep.
It's that simple.
Yep. You don't, and that's why mutual funds are so helpful, because you don't have to sit there and go, did I buy the right exact stock?
Right.
And like you're saying, we're just talking about Amazon, Apple as examples, but you know, a good mutual fund that you can because you got automatically buying hundreds of companies all at once is a perfect way of building wealth.
It is. A cup of coffee a day. I know that we talk about that constantly, but it's really as basic as we can get it. If you put $150 a month away for 40 years, just in the S&P, not even in a great mutual fund, you'll have over $1 million in 40 years. Or you've spent $72,000 on coffee. Yeah, sometimes
amazing,
that blows my mind.
Right? It is amazing.
Yeah. I just don't like coffee. I like coffee, but I like free coffee really well.
Yeah, I do. I like that's my favorite. Free coffee, free beer, free anything. Always my favorites.
Yes, absolutely. So no matter how many times we say this, and we've beaten this drum, I know, a lot today too, you really cannot time the market. So there's no reason to even try. Don't believe those newsletters that say you can, because they are like a stopped watch. They say it every single day. One day they'll be right, just like a stopped watch. It doesn't mean they're correct. It's impossible. We get people saying, you should have seen something coming. Well, how? Mm-hmm. Did we see the July month that we had? There's nothing positive right now. So for us to be able to tell the future and know what's going to happen is impossible. Short term.
Right. I started in the business, years ago, like we were talking. And right after I started, had the Great Recession. And Dave, we've talked about this several times in the office, but when it turned on March 9th in 2009, there was no news. And it went up significantly in the next 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
No one in our office, including Dave, who's been around in this business forever, was running around going, today's the day, because there was no news. And in fact, the news got worse for a long period of time after that, but the markets kept recovering.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we separate Wall Street and Main Street. As hard as that is, right? Because nothing right now, you would look around and say, everything's costing more, inflation is crazy, all these things that are going on. But the Wall Street is still recovering, it feels. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, we are not trying to time this, because that almost sounds like what we're saying is that we're done and there's no more volatility from this point. There will be volatility every day for the rest of your investing lives. That will never go away. That's one thing we can assure you of. I won't use the word guarantee because we're not allowed to, but I can tell you the market will continue to go up and down. That doesn't mean you jump out and go to anything that says you can't lose. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're saying. Enjoy this. I had a call. Again, I love to share stories because I think it makes it more real. I had a conversation with a lady that finally filed her taxes. They were a little bit behind. They were trying to get a few other things legally put in place. So she was filing her taxes for 2021, and she had a pretty large tax bill. So she called because she wanted to make sure that it was correct. So for her, it was larger than it was prior years. And she said this was probably because of distributions from 2021. And it was, because capital gain distributions came in larger than expected. There were a few things that happened. So when the market does well, as we've talked about, 19, 20, 21, it had been pretty strong. Mutual funds will also sell winners. And when we talk to people, again, they want us to harvest gains. They want us to sell the winners, but then they have to pay the tax. So it's interesting dynamic, again, on how emotional money is, right? So you made a lot of money. Her account was up significantly since they had started. She had taken income during that period of time, but she had a small relative to the earnings tax bill, and she was so upset because she owed tax. And then we talked it through, and she went, oh, why would this mm-hmm. bother me?
People separate that all the time. You know, by the time they do their taxes, it's so far between the two that they don't really see it. They're not looking at the value of their investments, even in most when you go through a bear market, right? And you're in a bear market, and then you're talking about paying taxes for last year's earnings.
Oh yeah, that's fun.
It's a weird dynamic, but that is the big picture. You have to think, and another thing on that, I know we're not supposed to stray into taxes, but people need to really pay attention to their effective tax rate. People get caught up into their tax bracket. Mm-hmm. But when you look, just divide your total tax, you know, your really tax liability by your income, and you'd be surprised how low your tax rate really is. I think it is always surprising for people because they go, well, I'm in the 25% tax bracket. How could I only be paying 13%?
Right. Yes. Also, though, when you look at that too, people don't. It's funny how percentages and dollars are very dependent, right? Because if you have $1 million, you go down 10%. That's $100,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about 10%, that's not a lot to be down when the market's having a downturn. But $100,000 is a lot of money. Yeah. So I think that's with taxes too, right? They look at, I owe $10,000. Well, that was only 6%, but it was $10,000.
Right. Right.
So
what have you done? Why did this happen? Right.
Yeah. And managing for taxes too, because another situation where someone came in and they said, I just need to figure out a way to reduce my taxes, which again, now I'm talking taxes, goes back to what Tom said. Their effective rate was less than 6, and they were trying to find a way to lower their taxes. And unfortunately, we're going to work through it with them and let them understand that you have to pay some tax. Being a zero bracket doesn't make sense either.
Right. Right. And again, you know, going back to what you said, buy low, sell high. Well, that works if we do it. But if you just want to buy low and watch it be high, that doesn't work out so well. So, yeah, people have to have a better perspective. And again, that's it goes back to having an advisor or so forth to really think outside the numbers here and give you a different perspective, because you can get caught up doing. I've seen more people make poor financial decisions based around taxes than a lot of things, because they're sitting there doing all this stuff about taxes and they or not doing something because they don't want to pay tax, and it was not good fundamental financial stuff.
Yeah, and trying to find ways to avoid capital gains tax. We saw that in a situation where a second home was, a realtor was actually trying to encourage a client to do a 1031 exchange on a second home. And it was not an investment property. It had never been rented. She'd never used it as an investment property. And she wanted to buy into a home with a mother-in-law suite with a family member. And they were being told that they could do a 1031 exchange. We kind of bowed out of it and said, we're not attorneys, we're not realtors, we're not even an accountant. But what we're telling you is you cannot 1031 exchange a secondary home into a primary residence and avoid capital gains.
Right. And the capital gains is, you know, it's reasonable what she's going to have to pay, but it's not a showstopper. You know, it's that whole thing. 1031 exchanges are such a weird thing because people are just like, so adamant about they want to defer these taxes. And remember, it's a defer, not an elimination. And they're so fixated on that that they can't go and go, well, is this really what I really want to do? Does this really play into my plan?
Right, right, right. Yeah. Again, go back to that plan. What are you trying to accomplish with the money? All right, we're going to take a break. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petzo. Again, we have time still for phone calls. If you'd like to call and ask questions on any financial topics, we'd love to answer them. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. So risk tolerance, that's a word that's used in our field a lot. It's an interesting thing to discuss, though, because it's such an emotional driven decision when you make these. Like the risk tolerance questionnaires, Tom and I were talking about one that was like 10 pages long. It's 13,000 questions, and it's asking things like, what would you do in this situation? How would you handle this? What would you do here? And then it kind of gives you a number. But then going back to the plan, you may answer, I would never jump out of an airplane. I could not possibly handle a 30% market correction, but you're 25 years old and you won't touch the money for 50 years. And they put you into a conservative portfolio based on that risk tolerance.
Right. And I that's something when I started in this business, because when I started this, I hadn't been in a previous, I mean, when I started with Dave, I hadn't been done this somewhere else. So when I started that, that was something that I learned right off the bat, that we don't put a lot of stock in risk tolerance questionnaires, because people, if the market is good, they're aggressive. The same person, the market goes down, then they remind you, oh, you remember, I'm conservative. And they'll go over and over and over. Or you say somebody that's conservative in the, and something going out of control, and they go, I think I'm now aggressive.
Yeah. And risk tolerance can't sway in the wind. That's emotions, right? If you look at the market and you say, you know what, in 2000, right before we had the big tech wreck, I was just all into air.com and I was buying all these great aggressive stocks, and then they went away and I was shocked. It's like, well, you were buying CDs and bonds before this? Yes. But my hairdresser and this person said I should buy these companies. See, again, that's emotion driven. That's not investing. That's not sticking with a plan. So that's why we throw this plan out a lot, right? We're certified financial planners for a reason, because we believe you plan out activities. You decide what you're going to do and how you're going to get there. And just because somebody said, hey, did you hear about this company? doesn't mean that's part of your plan.
Or Bitcoin or anything.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yep. Yep. So what does it mean to you? What do you mean when you say conservative? What does it mean when you say moderate? And what does it mean when you say aggressive? Aggressive to someone may mean buying their first individual stock. That may be aggressive to them. Or could be buying Bitcoin. It could be going from cash to bonds. So using the words conservative, moderate, and aggressive to me just don't usually work for most people. You really need to sit down again and say, what is the purpose for this money? If you need the money within a year, you could label that, I guess, conservative, but you shouldn't invest it at all. So is that mm-hmm. conservative, or is that just setting aside money because you need it for a purpose?
Being prudent.
Right.
Yeah.
So then moderate, what does that mean? I need money in 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. Well, if the market recovered and is doing well, why would you take it from the bond or the cash piece of it? Maybe you mm-hmm. want to harvest gains.
Right.
Is that aggressive or is that moderate? So see, right. That's why I don't think those words fit as well as people try to say.
Yeah. I think people like, because I think the, and our industry is so regulated that it's a CYA for firms and so forth, because if somebody gets upset and they go, what happened to all my money? You go, well, you filled out this form and signed that this is your risk tolerance, and then we invested according to that. Therefore, you can't hold us accountable mm-hmm. because you did, you know, this is what, you know, the system told us we were going to do, even though long term it might have been said mm-hmm. do something else. We're going to be held accountable to this survey.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think it, and just because that's what I've learned, it doesn't really hold any water.
Right. That's why I do like the investment policy statement idea better. And most financial advisors, I do believe, do those now. Because what that does is actually tells a story about you as an investor and what your objectives are. So it can go into my IRA is designed for this, my Roth is for this, my other accounts for this. And it kind of breaks it down. So maybe your overall picture could be moderate, but certain segments of your investments may be more aggressive, like Roth, if you don't plan on touching those forever. So building an investment policy statement to meet your objective goes back to putting the plan that you have in place so that we can, as your advisor and your partner, send you, show it to you and say, remember when we sat down and we talked about your overall goals and you remember agreeing on the investment policy statement to this? A lot of times when they see that, they go, oh yeah, I do. And they just mm-hmm. can take that deep breath.
And another thing is that sometimes to accomplish certain goals, whether it's retirement and so forth, it isn't always because you have to do things. Sometimes you aren't comfortable, right? You know, you have to step outside yourself and go, okay, I need to do this because it's the right thing to do for me to accomplish what I want to do, just like working out, just like you're saying. Sometimes things are just not going to be comfortable. So if you're going to be retiring in 20 years, you should be investing in things that are, quote unquote, more aggressive, because that's going to get you where you want to go. But you might fill out a survey and it says you're conservative, which would say you can't invest in that because it's not going to make you comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And comfortable too. Sometimes with a lot of cash, people sit on the sidelines and say, you know what, I feel comfortable because I have so much cash set in the bank. To me, that's one of the more riskier things people can do. Yes, your pile of money may stay at $50,000. It's there. You see it. It never moves. But your buying power every year is going down significantly. So there's risk to hold so much cash, even though it feels safe. So truly understanding what you have and why you have it. Again, go back to research, education, work with someone that can help you understand what inflation really looks like. I mean, this year, I-bonds are paying currently 9.62%. That tells you where inflation is. So your buying power of cash is decreasing by 9.62%. No one says, I want my money to hide, secretly go down instead of seeing it go mm-hmm. down. So that to me is risk too.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like blood pressure. They used to say it's a secret killer. Well, inflation is not so secret of a killer. And people sitting in a lot of cash, like you're saying, makes it feel secure, safe, mm-hmm. whatever you want to use the term. But it doesn't mean that it's smart. And mm-hmm. and so having some cash is always a good idea. Having too much cash can be very unhelpful yeah. long term.
And I think it was you that said a while ago on cash in a savings account isn't to be invested. It's an insurance against losing an income stream or of something breaking. That money is there so that you don't have to go to your investments, because usually how life works, right? counts are down, everything's going bad, then your air conditioner goes out. As hot as it is right now, you want an air conditioner. If all your money's invested, how do you go get that cash without selling low to buy something you need? You got to have an emergency plan.
And that's why also another thing that we've preached a lot of time is have a put and take cash account that you're going to know, because you know those things are going to happen. You know the car repair is going to happen. Those things are going to happen often, but they're not going to happen every day. So make sure that you're allowing for that, because those are the things that blow people up. Dental bills, those kind of, all of a sudden these things come out of it and they go, I had to run up a credit card because, well, I didn't have the cash.
Right. So you got to plan for the unexpected too, which is have some cash set aside that you can always use for those emergencies. An emergency is not vacation. An emergency is not buying a new car. Those aren't emergencies. Those are things you can, again, plan for and do properly. Emergencies are dental, cars breaking down, all those things that are going to happen every day of our life, but plan for them.
Yep.
So again, you see how much we like this word plan. We use it quite frequently. All right, so I think we'll go ahead and take our last break of the hour. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit on, are we in a recession? And share some statistics that we heard from a company that we listen to all the time called First Trust. And he shared some information that I thought we should share with you as well. But again, we do still have time for phone calls. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petzo today. And of course, as always, the day just flew by.
I know. Oh, it's 9:50.
A question that we're getting asked a lot, and it's been talked about a lot, and it's kind of a difficult question, right? Because the definition in the dictionary based on what the standard has been is changing a little bit. So the definition of a recession is 2 quarters of negative or declining GDP. So the first quarter was 1.6 down, and the second quarter was just reported this week was 0.9. So if you look at the definition in the dictionary, that says recession. But before, with prior measurements, they actually looked towards the National Bureau of Economic Research. And they put many, many, many more economic indicators into it than just GDP. So I found that quite interesting, too, because when you hear that, you go, oh, we're in a recession. Oh, my goodness, it's terrible, right? Everything's bad. Oh, wait, the market's up. Okay, so again, counterintuitive to what we ever would think, right? But then you say, jobs, the last 6 months, on average, we've added 457,000 jobs per month. This year. That's kind of a positive indicator. That's high number of jobs being added, right? Then you look at the production or annualized growth is up 5.2% on an annualized basis for the last 6 months. S&P earnings, revenues up 10%. Their overall earnings are up 3%. 70% of the companies in the S&P have actually beaten estimates. All of these sound like very good positive indicators, right? So I look at this and say, okay, I know we still lack confidence. We have a very uncertain political environment. We'll use that word. I think it's better than what we all are kind of feeling. So when we look at all these things, it's very, and it's an interesting poll, but I don't like economics to become political. Everything that we do right now is political. How we talk, how we walk, what we read, what we see, everything goes back to politics, and it's so divisive. If you have a different opinion, don't share it with me because I've got my opinion. But economics, to me, should be based 100% on numbers.
Yeah, black and white. It's just that's why numbers usually are so powerful, because they cut through all the noise.
Yeah, that was when we were going through COVID, right? Dave kept going to those charts and explaining, well, look at the numbers, look at the numbers, look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. There was no emotion in it. We were just like, look at what the numbers are showing us. Right. So I'm a numbers geek. I love spreadsheets. I love looking at different things and trying to figure out different ways of researching the numbers. So that's why we did a chart. You know, when was the bottom of the market? When's the top? When's the peak of this company? How is it done? These things make us interested and excited. There's not once that I sit down and I say, so how do you feel about this?
How do you feel about the jobs number?
Right.
Right.
There's no feelings to me. I go, wow, that's a great number. Mm-hmm. These are the things that we need to kind of in our mind try to, again, separate. What's emotion and what's data? Data should lead us to do what we need to do the right things. Emotion's going to take us off the track every single time.
Like Dave always said, everybody, the greatest investors would be Vulcans because they have no emotion. And another thing on that is that where you get your information is important.
Oh, very.
And so what you're putting into your mind is probably how you're going to feel about things. So if you allow the noise in, then that's going to condition how you feel about things, like you're saying, feel about it. And also say, well, it says it's not in recession, but it is. Or, you know, this is not as bad, but I'm sure it's going to get worse because I listen, or I'm listening to these people and they're telling me it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. But look at the numbers. Right. Stay with the numbers.
Right. And it could. I mean, we're in unprecedented times, right? We've talked about this earlier. We've never had a shutdown of the economy completely and then a complete reopen. Different than a recession and a recovery, this is a shutdown and a reopen. So numbers are all over the place. So mm-hmm. it's a little bit harder to find what you want, and it's easier to find what you're looking for. So don't live your life in an echo chamber and say, well, these people are saying this, so I have to 100% believe it. Maybe stop and just say, okay, but I just heard jobs were great. I also heard that the S&P earnings are good. So what am I missing when we say we're in a recession? Could we go into one? Oh, yeah, anytime. I don't know when that's going to happen or when it could possibly happen. Again, not predicting. I'm just saying currently, based on what we can see, are we in a recession or are we just in a dictionary-defined recession?
Yeah. Are we in a lull? You know, another thing on that is we've been in recessions before. That's what this whole word recession, and we build it up into this scary thing. And it's just like, okay, we've had recessions before. And we've always recovered from them. So to make it into this dire thing that it's the end of the world or it's the coming of the end of the world just because we have economic recession, it isn't. And so that's what people are putting a lot of emotion around that word. And they aren't really looking at the numbers.
Right, right. So just to kind of recap a little bit, get your plan in place, start investing, become an excellent investor. Look back and go, wow, those were the greatest and easiest 40 years of my life because I just got started. If you're a little further in the line, doesn't mean it's too late. Let's just figure out a plan to get you where do you want to be. And everybody's retirement's different. How much do you need in retirement? I don't know. Do you want to travel the world, stay in 5-star hotels? What is your objective in retirement? Is it, I love to garden, fish, play golf, a lot cheaper hobbies? Then maybe you don't need so much. So that goes into that plan, right? What does retirement look like for you?
Mm-hmm.
I know if you're 20-year-old, you don't know. But when mm-hmm. you're getting to 45, 50, you have some idea of what you want.
And start really visualizing that and make and really see yourself doing it. You know, they have a lot of practices and stuff people say is really visualize your goals.
Mm-hmm.
Write them down. Make it HD. It's very clear what you're going to do and review that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it'll happen if you focus on it.
Right. And I did want to share just a few little housekeeping things because sometimes we get so caught up in everything else that we don't forget the details. Make sure at least once a year you do a recheck on all your investments. Make sure your information's correct. Simple things like your phone number, your address, that you know where all your accounts are. You haven't lost any investment accounts. We have people call us or we call them and say, you have this little account sitting here. Did you know it was there? And they didn't even know. Their address is wrong. They hadn't gotten statements in forever. And they didn't know that it was there. Don't lose money. That's the easy mm-hmm. way too, right? If you have accounts that you started a long time ago, that's the easiest money to keep investing mm-hmm. into if you know it's there.
Yeah, don't lose accounts.
Yes, don't do that. Don't do that. Also, check your beneficiaries. If you had a life change, you lose a spouse, you've lost a child, you've been divorced, something changes in your life, you need to make sure your beneficiaries are correct. We've had two instances where people hadn't updated their beneficiaries and they're like, wait, I've been divorced for 7 years. We weren't aware of it. So we didn't know they were divorced and they needed to update their beneficiaries. It's a lot different, right? If you don't change those beneficiaries, because it will default normally to a plan document for the custodian, and maybe someone that you didn't want to get money will get it.
Yeah. That, and like you're saying, that is something people overlook or forget because mm-hmm. it's not the statement balance that you're looking at, but those practical things. Again, another thing, check your credit report. Make sure that you do that once a year too, and make sure there is anything out there because identity theft and so forth is so rampant right now.
Right, right. And trusts. If you take the time, the effort, and the money to put a trust in place, assets don't automatically go into it because you have a document. You need to retitle assets into the name of the trust if you've decided to do one. We see that too, where people say, well, I have a trust, but your account's not in it. It doesn't work. You have to actually physically put those assets retitled into the name of your trust.
Yeah, going back to the beneficiaries too, that's another thing people talk about is I have a will, and that doesn't always work. That doesn't have a thing with the beneficiaries.
Right. On your IRAs especially, you want to make sure those are there. I know we're coming up to almost being done for the hour. If you have questions during the week, we'd be happy to chat with you. You can call our office or you can shoot us an email. My email, jstone@petsofinancial.net, or submit through our website, which is petsofinancial.com. Tom, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Torin, next time you're here, we're going to expect you to talk to us and share some of your insight on being a young investor. How's that? All right, I got a thumbs up. So he's planning on doing that. Again, thank you for letting us do this. We very much enjoy it. Dave, I hope you have a great long weekend, and we'll see you next time.